This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. We cover a lot of things going on around Douglas County. Wanted to give you an update on Douglas Cares. Executive Director Sarah Wickersham, thanks for coming in today.
Always good to be here, Kyle.
So talk about your move. Where are things at?
Yeah, so we are in our brand new building, and it is absolutely beautiful. There are a few finishing touches that still need to be done. If you come by the site, you'll see that our door locks aren't quite finished up, and then we've got just a couple of little finishing touches to finish up to get ready to go. But we're in there, and we're operating, and we are happy to see our clients.
And how long ago did you essentially start working from there?
We moved in the second week of January. The third week of January, we had all of our belongings moved over and started operations the fourth week.
And what's it been like so far? I mean, this is obviously kind of an evolving situation. You can't, unlike maybe some small home moves, you can't get everything done and perfectly in place in a weekend.
Yeah, that's right. And we did have movers to help us with the project, but we're picking away at it around our typical work day. There are still things like shelves and curtains to be hung up and some paintings in our offices, just things like that we're just kind of cracking away at as we go forward.
And talk about the new facility, where it's at.
We are at 1939 Northeast Diamond Lake Boulevard in that beautiful new construction that Guy Kennerly put together down there. Our building is the second one he's putting up in that lot, and there will be a third one that he's already broken ground on in that area as well.
And how many more square feet do you have on this?
We only have 1,000 more square feet, but in our old building, because of the way that it was designed, it wasn't all 8,000 feet weren't really functional or usable. It had been a cancer center, and some of the rooms were very odd shaped and had very thick walls. So it feels like a much bigger increase than it actually is in terms of square footage.
And for all the things that you guys do, especially a lot of the things that are very confidential and you need quiet and soundproofing and all that, probably set up a lot better.
Yeah, it really is. We have the building well divided between our forensic wing and our mental health wing. In the forensic room wing, we have very confidential spaces, two family conference rooms, and our clinic observation room and forensic interview room are all soundproofed to help kind of cut down on that noise transference and keep our family's information secret and safe.
Now, as you kind of wrap up or get ready to kind of wrap up the end of this process, are there still other things you need over there?
Yes, we do. We need some things that we didn't really anticipate needing. We have more bathrooms in the new building than we had in the old building, so we had to order some more things for those, like mirrors and garbage cans and little storage cubbies. We've furnished the lobby, but I think more than anything, we need some artwork and decorative pieces.
And that gives people, and of course, when you say artwork and decorative pieces, you got to kind of think about the sensitivity of what you're doing there.
Yes, that's right. So those, we have to have a very kind of specified set of features that need to coincide and be trauma informed and match the rest of the color scheme of the building. So so we would like to be the ones to pick out that artwork, but we will always take donations in funds so that we can have some more to play with for that.
Yeah, that's one of these situations where your best thing to do is not provide, go out somewhere, buy, or even as an artist, create a painting and bring it to them, but you probably should just bring them a check.
Yes, that's right.
So CARES overall, we've gotten through the holiday season, and gosh, what a time to get ready to move. Do you tend to see an uptick in the need for services?
We do. Whenever there is a school closure, because schools are our number one partners in identifying and responding to child abuse, teachers really are on the front line of that. Whenever there's a school closure, there's a little bit of a lull in the recognition of child abuse cases. And so when school kicks back in again, we get a bit of an influx in cases as kids come in. They've been out for 2 weeks. You know, there might be some new bruises. There might be some new allegations of harm.
So is it, so, and it's not so much that this hasn't been going on, you know, before the holiday season, but just that gap of not having a teacher see them.
Right. But the gap of not having the teacher see them. And when we always want to be very careful when we do this work and when we talk about this work, because parenting is difficult. It is stressful and challenging. And particularly for families in poverty, those stresses are amplified. So when you have children out of school, you just have more stressors. It costs more to feed them. It takes more time to care for them. You might be missing work so that you can be home with them. So parents are feeling increased stress, and when we're stressed out, we're more likely to make decisions we wouldn't when we're okay.
And so what about the kind of the relationship dynamics that play into that? Is it also sometimes during these breaks, though, that you have maybe relatives that are visiting or people that the kids aren't normally around, where that might ultimately relate to certain things happening?
Yeah, that is an interesting feature, particularly in sex abuse or molestation. It is so hard for any of us to imagine that a family member that we trust might engage with our child that way, but it is more commonly somebody we know and trust that has access to our children than it is a stranger. So having family around could increase the risk of sex abuse.
And my understanding on that part, too, is that for kids that have been enduring this maybe over a long period of time, maybe periodically, maybe on a regular basis, that really it's kind of a long-term recovery. Maybe that's not the right word, to get through the process to trust any family.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. It takes years to recover, and recovery, I think, is the right word. It can take years to recover from these kinds of insults to and betrayals to our core trust and belief in humanity. The people who are supposed to love us and protect us, when they hurt us, it makes it very difficult to approach the world with trust and openness again. We do have that the other half of our agency, the mental health half, is where we start caring for that long-term process of recovery and rebuilding trust and teaching healthy boundaries and helping them recognize what's going to be safe for them and what isn't.
And maybe over the holidays as well, if kids are visiting with maybe extended family, or maybe they get to go hang out with a friend or something for a few days, something like that. Don't kids sometimes come back and seeing what are very good, healthy, normal family situations and going, what happened with mine? Why? Because they sometimes might assume that everybody's got all these kinds of things in their life, and they go somewhere and realize they don't.
Yeah, that does happen. Unfortunately, it's always heartbreaking when we hear it, but sometimes we have kids who just don't know that what they've been experiencing isn't normal. They think that all kids have this experience. So yeah, sometimes we do have kids start sharing stories with each other, and kids are much more likely to disclose to another peer than they are to an adult. So usually the first time they tell that story is to a friend. And that's where they get this feedback and this interaction where somebody tells them that's not normal, and then it goes from there.
And where does it go there? Do you have kids that talk to, they aren't going to just come into your office, but do they, they talk to teachers, other trusted people?
Yeah, ideally they will talk to a teacher or to their own parent. One of the prevention efforts we have is that we do talks at schools with middle schoolers and teens about what to do when your friend tells you something bad happened to them, for that very reason that kids don't always know how to respond to that, where to go for help. They want to help. Every kid I've ever met wanted to help, but sometimes they don't know the right way.
All right, Sarah Wickersham with Douglas Cares. More when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson at 1. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show coming at 4 o'clock. And Melanie Prummer, Peace at Home Advocacy Center on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. Sarah Wickersham of Douglas Cares, who just moved, kind of the wrap-up stages of moving. Have you ever moved a whole nonprofit organization before?
No, I actually haven't. I was with Head Start on up until... That building got about halfway done, so I was part of the process of planning that move, but then I moved on before they actually had to move all their belongings in. So, no, I haven't done this before.
You know, it's got to be a unique thing, whether it's a nonprofit or a company. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when seven, eight years ago when we moved the radio stations in here, that was actually like a year-long process because it involved a whole lot of technology and construction and all of mm-hmm. that, and people came over in stages. So how do you have you been able to and your staff continue on with all the heavy workload that you have while still dealing with all these just general logistics of things that have got to get done at some point?
Mostly I do that and let the staff do their work. So I double in construction. I've been putting up the shelves and just trying to pick away at arranging rooms when my staff are working with seeing their clients. Our number one priority is to make sure we see our clients and we don't lapse in those services. We did close for 1 week. So that nobody saw clients and everybody, all hands on deck. Every member of my team was out moving furniture, arranging rooms, loading trucks for that week. And now they're back seeing clients, and me and other support staff are still arranging rooms and making sure things can go.
Now that you've gotten proficient at that, though, you're not looking for like side work or anything.
You know, the contracting company did offer me a job.
Think about, you know, any organization moving, but the dynamics of it, I'm sure it has been really a challenge. And how many staff do you guys have right now?
We have 24 staff, and we are hiring.
So what are you hiring for?
Now that we have more room, we're hiring for another therapist, and we are interviewing currently for a peer support position for the co-occurring program that we're launching right now.
And tell me more about the program.
So our co-occurring program involves a team of three. Jeanette is our therapist. She has many years of experience in the field of mental health therapy, in substance use disorders, and in child abuse and investigations and response. So she is our lead on that team. She is joined by Stephanie, who came to us from ADAPT. We thank you, ADAPT, for all of the wonderful training you have given many of our team members. She was on the ACT team, and she has quite a bit of experience with substance use disorder and with the combination of substance use disorder and mental health concerns. And now we are looking for a very special person who has lived experience with substance use and has been in recovery for at least 2 years and is ready to share that knowledge and growth with somebody else to help them along that path.
And that includes somebody that's got sort of the professional credentials that go with that, right?
The professional credential that we're needing for that role is a peer support certificate. If we find the right person, we can guide them on that path. It's a relatively short credentialing process.
Well, and I know it seems like, especially when you're dealing with the addiction side of things, that oftentimes the best people some of the best people to help others are people who've lived through it themselves and gotten to the other side.
Yeah, there's just something about that experience that those of us who have never been completely dependent upon a substance to function, to get through our day, we just don't quite understand what that's like. And we want someone who has walked that path and has come to the other side and is ready to live again without substances.
How many kids do you estimate you see in an average year?
Ooh. We see close to 1,000 kids a year in all of our services. So it runs 350 to 400 for a child abuse evaluation. And then with the therapy services on top of that, we run close to 1,000 kids throughout the year.
Now, has that been pretty consistent number for a few years, or has that gone up?
It has gone up. It's gone up, but partially it's gone up because we are our capacity has gone up. The state of the county, I don't think, has changed dramatically in the last few years, not to account for that increase in the services that we provide.
Do you feel like there's any more openness to reporting these issues than maybe there was at one point in the past?
I believe there is, yes. I think we have gone through a cultural shift where we all feel more responsible to making sure that the children of our community are cared for and safe. And so all of us, most of us, when we see something, we will report it.
Now, we were just talking about the new positions and what you're looking for there. What about the background of your staff? It sounds like probably a lot of diverse types of backgrounds because of the different services you're providing.
Yes, that's very true. We have a large proportion of our staff actually have lived experience with child maltreatment, with having come from homes where they were maltreated or were in the foster system or something like that. So there's a lot of lived experience within our group for that very, very challenging issue. But our people come from everywhere, from all over the United States. We have our newest therapist is from Wyoming. We have one from Minnesota. We have a couple that came over from Tennessee. From really all over the United States, we have a very diverse crew right now, and their training is as diverse as they are.
How do you attract them to from where they are, where they were, to come to Douglas County?
I think Douglas Cares is just a really wonderful place to work. The majority of those people didn't come for Douglas Cares, honestly. They came for a different agency for some other type of reason, and then found Douglas Cares and decided to make us their home.
Now, Douglas Cares has been around how many years now?
We are just beginning our 31st year. We have been in Douglas County serving the kids of Douglas County for over 30 years now.
And with very, as I recall, humble, shall we say, beginnings.
Yes, we started in occupying just a couple of rooms in a little house with two part-time employees, one who did interviews and one who managed the business end of things, taking referrals and doing advocacy. And from there, we have grown to 24 employees and a 9,000 square foot brand new building.
What do you think is ahead in the next year now that you're kind of getting ready to get settled?
Well, we're going to continue settling in the building that we've got now. The newest construction that Guy Kennerly is building out on that same lot, he has already offered us a suite in for next year's expansion plan, which is a problem sexual behavior treatment program. That's for youth who have sexually offended against their peers. And there are criteria for that, but we have an amazing provider in town who treats children who have perpetrated against their peers, but there's only one of him, and we have a great need in our community. I think we have an even bigger need with youth than we do with adults as perpetrators, and that's because youth under 17, 18, they really show a lot of progress, and they heal, they recover, and they don't reoffend. So we want to be able to step in and give a better life to that child, as well as to any other child that child might eventually offend against.
So do you figure that is that'll be up by the end of the year, or is that going to be next year?
That's next year. That will be our that'll be launching January or February next year.
All right. And if people want to help you out with some of these later needs with getting into the new building and what you need financially, how do they do that?
Go to our website and click on the donate button, and that will take you to each of the campaigns that we have running right now. You can choose which one you want to donate money to. I also want to invite everybody to our Strikes and Spares for Douglas Cares event that's happening in March. Be on the lookout for that. There will be lots of advertisements and lots of ways that you can help with that. You can come and just bowl with us for an evening and enjoy fun and pizza, or you can donate ahead of time.
All right, Sarah Wickersham for Douglas Cares, 1257.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.